Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology, and today we're going to take a look at Venus's upcoming conjunction with Pluto. So Mercury is turning retrograde this week in the sign of Capricorn. We took a look at that already. As that happens, Venus is passing through the stationing Mercury in Capricorn. They're moving through a conjunction. And then right after that, Venus will conjoin Pluto in Capricorn, in those late degrees of Capricorn. It's interesting because we had a Venus-Pluto conjunction right around the time Venus went retrograde last year. We're going to take a look back at that today and just refresh on some of the dates surrounding Venus's last conjunction with Pluto in Capricorn about a year ago right now. And then we're going to talk today about three Venus-Pluto lessons, or you might call them insights, that hopefully prepare us for and deepen our experience of the upcoming conjunction between Venus and Pluto. If you are interested in like a horoscope for this one, what I would recommend doing is going back to the Mercury retrograde horoscopes that I did at the start of this week and look at those in terms of the house position that I read for. And that house position, because we're looking at the whole sign house of Capricorn in those horoscopes, will be identical to the position of Venus in your birth chart right now. So you'll hear me in that video actually talking about the fact that this is a Mercury retrograde that's sort of toned by Venus, and the Venus-Pluto conjunction could be a part of that as well. So again, I would just say if you want a horoscope on this one, go back to Mondays and just after you listen to this, kind of retroactively apply the archetypal insights to the house location discussed in Monday's video. That would be my advice for you if you are looking for something like that. Well, before we get into it today, as always, don't forget to like and subscribe, share your comments. It helps the channel to grow. I really appreciate it when you guys do that. You can find a transcript of any of my daily talks on my website, which is nightlightastrology.com, as you all know. We are in the process of trying to reach our goal for this year's Kickstarter. We have, as of the time I'm making this, we have 4 days left. So just 4 days left. That's it. Just four. And we have to get to 1,608 backers. That is our goal. So people sometimes ask, like, what is that goal based on? It's based on what we project the earnings to be if we beat our record from last year. So if we beat our record from last year, we should end up in the ballpark of what we did last year, which will enable us to meet all of our goals financially for this year. Kickstarter always asks you to set a basic goal in order for the project to be successfully funded. We always set that well below our actual target goal, because if we don't reach the actual target goal, you don't get any of it. So we set kind of like a basic goal to make sure that just the absolute bare minimum thing, like our expenses, are covered for the year in addition to what will be taken out in taxes and fees and stuff like that. So the goal that we're really trying to get to still is 1,608 backers. We know that if we get there, the way the numbers are tracking right now, if we get to that number, we will more than likely be set. And we could get there with fewer backers than that, but we are really hoping to also break our record from last year. It's just kind of a, you know, it makes it fun, and it's a check for us knowing that we're growing our audience and stuff like that. So if you have not donated already, if you want to find the link, sorry, it's in the description of this video or the comments section. You click on that link to the Kickstarter, you go over there, you can pitch in anything, $5, $10, it's just a one-time donation. You can choose a reward when you donate. We have all sorts of exclusive talks and readings and lectures. There's an Astrology of 2023 calendar that tracks the transits I'm following on the YouTube channel. And then the best deal that I have is 50% off all of my online astrology classes. So I have a first year class called Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic that starts in June and November of 2023. You could purchase that program for 50% off through the Kickstarter. And then you can sort of use that credit whenever you want. If you want to start in 2023, or if you wanted to wait a year because you got busy, and you could apply it in 2024. If you bundle my classes together, specifically the 4-class bundle, I have 6 total programs, year 1, year 2, horary, readings and passages, the masterclass series, and roots and spheres. All of those programs, any of those can be bundled. So any of the program bundles that you get, you can use those on any of the programs. And when you do that, the savings per class goes up significantly. So the 4-class pass is going to give you 75% off on the total cost of the course, almost 70. It's like just a little bit below 75%, but it's Really, really big saving. We made this deal as a special way of saying thank you for reaching 50,000 subscribers this year. So special deal. Don't forget to check that out. When you donate, don't forget that the big thing we're doing this year is we are trying to build a donation-based reading clinic. So offering affordable astrology services to people who otherwise couldn't afford them. So we're using a significant amount of the capital that we earned to get that off the ground this year. So we try to do some cool things and build the platform, build the audience, build the offering out and make it, you know, just more serviceable and more, do more cool things for people to grow this, the astrological community. We feel like one of the things that the astrological world is missing, not because anyone's to blame, just it's something that we could do as astrologers, we could do a better job of, is finding a way of offering more affordable reading services for people. So that's our big goal this year. And when you help us, when you donate, whatever it is that you donate, whether you choose a huge, big reward like a class pack or just a $25 reward and get our calendar for the year ahead, you're helping us reach that goal. So we really appreciate it. Really banging the drum. We've got just a few days left, just 4 days left to go. We still need about 600 backers left. So big push. We need a big final push of support, and really a big, huge thank you to the 1,000 people approximately who have already donated. Really deeply thank you from me, my family, my team. We really appreciate you guys. All right. Well, let's take a look at this Venus Pluto conjunction. And I also want to take a look back at last year's Venus Pluto conjunction. So here's Venus Pluto December 31st. That is this Saturday. You'll see the two planets coming together in Capricorn. Now, if I go one day ahead, you're going to see that Venus has passed over. So this is from approximately Saturday, December 31st to January 1st, New Year's Day, that you're going to see Venus passing over Pluto. So be careful how much you are drinking or consuming. Be careful of the drama that could fire our flare up in relationships on New Year's Eve. It is a, it's a really deep and kind of intense transit of Venus and Pluto to be happening at a time where a lot of people are, you know, are often drinking. And then you should, if you want to have fun and celebrate, you should, have a good time. But remember that if, you know, Venus and the Lord of the Underworld suddenly appear on Saturday and into Sunday this weekend, your astrologer told you. So just keep that in mind. But what makes this one really interesting was Venus-Pluto conjunctions or squares or oppositions are, you know, they happen throughout the year as Venus basically tracks along with the sun. You're going to get them every year. The four major hard aspects are going to come through. So it's not like we're a stranger to this aspect, and it's pretty quick. But this one has some history. Let's go back 1 year. 1 year ago, right now, what was happening? Well, let's take it back just a little bit. And if you go to about the winter solstice of 2021, I want you to notice what is happening. So this is December 19th, 2021, about a year ago into the 20th, Venus turns retrograde. So basically right on the winter solstice or the Capricorn solstice, depending on which hemisphere you're in. Capricorn solstice, Venus turns retrograde in a conjunction with Pluto at approximately 26 degrees, about 1 degree off from where their conjunction is going to be this weekend. So this one has some history behind it. That conjunction between Venus and Pluto came through last year, December 24th, December 25th, December 26th, 7th, 8th, right about into that period. Now notice that at that same time, Venus and Mercury crossed paths as well. It wasn't too long after that that we had a Mercury retrograde, although that one started in Aquarius and not until midway into January. We have a Mercury retrograde now that's about to take place this week at about the same place that Venus turned retrograde last year. So just some interesting parallels between what was happening last year at this time and what is happening now, especially with Venus, Mercury, and Pluto. So the first thing that I would recommend before we get into some of the insights and ideas about this transit for today, the first thing that I would recommend is just looking back and saying, you know, where was I a year ago right now? What was that Venus retrograde in Capricorn like for me? And look at the whole sign house of Capricorn. If you don't know, if you want to know more about the topics of that house, look back at my Mercury retrograde horoscopes that I did on Monday, because those horoscopes will focus for you on the whole sign house of Capricorn according to your rising sign. At least then you can have some sense of, you know, what topics are involved, and that will help you refine your understanding of where Venus was last year in Capricorn and where Venus is about to be this weekend. So parallels, notice the parallels and notice what lessons you are learning and revisiting, or what kinds of events or experiences or themes relative to Venus, goddess of love, beauty, sensuality, relationships, sisters, women, sex, desire, aesthetics, art, performance, entertainment, anything that's pleasing or pleasant or enjoyable, things that are friendly and easy and fortunate, things that smell nice. You know, so think of Venusian things and think what kinds of Venusian themes of birth and death, themes of rebirth, themes of transformation, encounters with the darker side of Venus, perhaps with Pluto, was I going through a year ago about this time, and am I now going through again? So that's what I would, that's where I would begin this meditation in order to get the most out of the transit this weekend. Okay, so that's my advice there. Now what I'd like to do is move into three Venus-Pluto lessons, or you could call them insights. I'm not sure if they're a lesson or not, but, you know, but, and these are things that I sat down, because I sat down and I started thinking about, like, what happens when Pluto transits Venus in people's birth charts? What do I see? What kinds of lessons are people generally learning? And across the board, like, if I had to predict, what will a client learn during their Pluto-Venus square conjunction or opposition, for example, a hard aspect. This one's a conjunction in the sky right now, but in general, what do my clients tend to learn? What do they come to me to talk about? What kinds of emotions do they have? What kinds of events are typical? And as I thought about it, I came up with these three lessons or insights that I hope you will find valuable. Number one is that secrets are sacred. Secrets are sacred. One of the things that I have noticed that comes up during Pluto-Venus dynamics in clients' charts that I think is super applicable for any standard Venus-Pluto transit, even one that's, you know, moving through the sky relatively briefly like this one, is that people will come to me and they will have a secret. Now there's let's just say it like this. There are two different things that I'm used to seeing when it comes to the type of secret that a person has that they will then share with me. One is a secret that they have been carrying for a very, very long time. For example, I wrote down just a few notes. I have had clients tell me that they are ready to reveal to family members that they are not of a heterosexual orientation, whether that's I'm gay or whatever else, just like that their parents don't know their real sexual identity. And so they've been holding that secret for a long time, living a life that's meant to keep that from certain people finding out. I've seen that a lot. Or people who are transitioning and making a really tough choice to be more like overt in the expression of their gender, and maybe risking the, you know, like risking the abuse that they may suffer. Like, you know, I'm going to make a transition and I've been holding this in. So the one kind of secret, basically, and those are two like kind of extreme examples. It could be that I've had an affair, I'm attracted to someone else. There's something I want to do, or there's something about my identity, or something I'm attracted to, something I desire, something that happened, and I've been holding the secret for a really, really long time. And there's nothing necessarily wrong about the secret. Like, most of the time when I think of this kind of secret, I think about a secret that usually out of guilt, shame, or fear has been held for a really long time. And it usually has something to do with who or what they are or love. Okay, so that's like one version of a Venus-Pluto secret. Now, the other version of a Venus-Pluto secret is going to be more like a transgression. So I mentioned a fair. This would actually fit more under the second category. I did something. I said something. I have a thought that I keep inside, right? It's something that someone, it's more like I have a clear, a moral or a spiritual or an ethical blemish or deficiency. I effed up, you know, I messed up somehow. And nobody knows it but me. I've been carrying this load and nobody knows it but me. And it's kind of, I think it's funny because you could hear that and you could go like, well, what does that have to do with Venus? You know, like what is carrying some kind of transgression have to do with Venus? Well, usually it has something to do with a desire that became problematic. Like the most basic one that I hear with Venus Pluto is the admission of an affair, even if it's just an emotional affair, or even if it's just someone that's really, really struggling, like I'm attracted to other people and, you know, I don't want to hurt my spouse. You know, it could be very basic, like to me, that's like a very basic human struggle that I have heard more clients talk about in far more transits than just Venus Pluto, right? But it's a particularly Venus Pluto kind of thing to deal with something that you did or thought or said, or something that you think, or a judgment that you hold, or a transgression that you made, a shortcoming, and to be worried about whether other people will reject you or accept you if they knew, or if they will forgive you or show compassion, understanding, and mercy or something like that. But a lot of this Venus-Pluto dynamic, this particular way of looking at Venus-Pluto, has to do with social acceptance or rejection and why we carry what feel like secret sins or transgressions in light of what the social consequences might be. I hope that made sense. I think that made sense. So, all right. But in either case, I think I wanna just stand for secrets for a second. Sometimes, okay, let's be clear before I go on, you know, making the case that secrets are important, that secrets are sacred. I want to say that some secrets are not. Some secrets need to be shared. Some things that are being hidden out of shame need to be expressed. Some things that we carry need to be confessed, you know. And so there's room for that. I'm not trying to get into any kind of black or white thinking. But most of the time, I feel like we live in a culture that is obsessed with confessing rather than keeping secrets. Confessing, getting it off your chest, just telling everyone what you've really been thinking and really been going through. I studied confessional memoir writing in graduate school. And so, you know, my channel is flavored with confessional storytelling. I love it. I am not trying to ridicule that at all. But sometimes I think that the best confessional storytelling is balanced. This is something that I actually wrote a paper about in graduate school, that good, like really good confessional storytelling, if you're reading a narrator, like a nonfiction narrator who's telling you something about themselves, there's a way in which they are concealing as they are revealing. So what does that mean? You get the feeling that as someone is sharing something with you, something secret, something they are confessing, a true part of themselves that they're sharing or showing, that just as they are sharing that, you get the feeling, the distinct, it's like tangible physical feeling that there are depths and mysteries and layers to this person that you didn't know were there before. And you get the feeling that there is a lot more to the person than meets the eye. So in other words, if the kind of storytelling I like when people share confessions is like, wow, you know, that's a really revealing, beautiful, vulnerable thing to share. I also get the feeling in the way that this person shared it, in the selectiveness of the details or the tone of their voice or some other, you know, art of storytelling, that this person has hidden depths, that there are many rooms in the mansion of this person's psyche, and there are drawers and cupboards and, you know, bookshelves filled with things, and that they are carefully selecting things to share from those depths. So in other words, confession, for it to be really effective, it should be delivered in a way that makes you feel like the person isn't showing all of their cards. Does that make sense? I hope you guys follow what I'm saying. If you've ever been on a date with someone and they try to share with you every single thing about themselves too quickly, you kind of get the feeling like, you know, I need a little mystery here. You know what I mean? And so I think a lot of people will appreciate someone who artfully reveals portions of themselves as you're getting to know someone, as you're falling in love. You know, it's like, oh, well, here's a little, you know, I learned something new about this person, and they don't share everything with me, not out of fear or paranoia, but because there's something sacred about holding a treasure chest of your own secrets. Now, secrets don't have to mean that a secret doesn't necessarily have to be damaging to someone. It doesn't have to be, it could be a transgression. It could be a sin. I think some of those sins make for the best secrets. Some of our own shortcomings we don't make anyone suffer through but ourselves, you know, like some of the things you mess up on and you just are like, you know what? I'm going to be the one to carry this. No one else is going to carry it for me. I'm not going to put it on anyone else. And I'm going to live with it. I'm going to live with the complicated feelings of having done something that I regret or whatever. Don't you feel like, I mean, I'm not talking necessarily about like, oh, I killed someone and buried a body. You know what I mean? But like, I don't know, like, what are the things that you've said or done that were shitty? Maybe it's in traffic on your drive one day, but you have to live with it. And living with it and not telling anyone, maybe it was a little bit of embarrassment, also not wanting to like put a burden on anyone else. There's something about carrying secrets, whether they are transgressions or any other kind of secret, that gives us depth. There's an interiority that's created in our lives when we live with a healthy amount of secrets. There should be like there should be rooms filled with secrets in the psyche. Now, that doesn't, you know, and again, like, so that when it comes to being vulnerable, when it comes to sharing, when it comes to revealing or confessing, there's a feeling that it is actually special. When there's just a constant, like, let me just be vulnerable and open and share every last thought and feeling and experience like that all the time. It's like someone who's always pouring their cup out, you know, there's never anything in the cup, then you're going to be thirsty. And I think sometimes we mistake the idea of being vulnerable and of like sharing constantly. You know, we think that that's always a good thing. And sometimes, of course, it is. But other times we're depriving ourselves of a richness that can only be experienced, that can only nourish us and support us because we've kept the lid on the alchemical vessel. We've kept some things inside just for us. Could be a mistake. It could be a pleasure, you know? So, but when I talk to clients during Venus-Pluto transits, I often see like time and time again that they will deal with their secrets, their good ones, their bad ones, anything, all those ones they've been carrying for a long time, ones they've been carrying for a short time. And there may be an occasion with Venus Pluto to share a secret, to reveal something that's been hidden, to purge ourselves. I think also there is a time to be transformed because we choose to carry something rather than to feel the need to spill it. We have to let it cook inside of us somewhere. And that's, to me, these are very Venus-Pluto dynamics, as well as the choice of whether to share it or not. It's not like there's one right or wrong choice in every situation. It's different. A few words that I thought you guys would find interesting. James Hillman said, why do we focus so intensely on our problems? What draws us to them? Why are they so attractive? They have the magnet power of love. Somehow we desire our problems. We are in love with them as much as we want to get rid of them. Problems sustain us. Maybe that's why they don't go away. What would a life be without them? Completely tranquilized and loveless. There is a secret love hiding in each problem. So I want to encourage you guys to just consider, maybe it's time to release a problem, to let it go, to solve it, to transform it in a very overt, cathartic manner, which is a very Venus-Pluto thing. But the other side of it that I don't think I've ever really talked about, and I realized this as I was writing today's talk, it was like, sometimes it's really important to choose to keep a secret and to let it cook inside of you. And a secret, keeping a secret, maybe it's a transgression, but maybe it's just some basic thing. And I don't, in other words, a secret doesn't have to be about someone or something that you're keeping from someone. It's just something that you choose to keep for yourself. A thought, an idea, an experience. So I encourage everybody to just think about the idea that what you choose to keep right now inside and what you choose to internalize can become a really rich treasure. Our secrets become our hidden source of strength, even when our secrets are our problems or our failures or our embarrassments or our pleasures. Sometimes I'll take pleasure in, you know, something my kids do. It'll be really random. And I've noticed that, you know, sometimes it's like I want to share them with my wife, and we both do that, and I love doing that. Sometimes I'll just keep something, though, that like really makes me happy that I see my kids doing, and I won't tell anyone. And for as many days as I've sat here trying to think of what to say and what stories to share, there has had to be many, many times where I have said, nope, I'm not going to share that one. I'm just going to keep that one for me. So anyway, I encourage you guys to think over the sacredness of secrets. Number two. Oh, by the way, we'll come back to that in a minute. Number two, blemishes are beautiful. Venus Pluto loves to bring up the idea of something getting stained. Like Venus Pluto, for example, several times when Venus was in aspect with Pluto last year, like I was looking back and I was like, well, what did I experience? Well, one of the things I experienced was house training our dog. We got a puppy last year, a little cabochon. I don't know if you guys know what those are, but they're like these little white fluff balls. And my kids love this little cabochon. Anyway, we were, you know, potty training the dog, and our furniture and, you know, rugs and carpets and stuff were, you know, constantly getting cleaned or whatever, because the puppy was having accidents as she was learning. she was learning the rules of the house. But luckily, we have an older dog. Our older dog was really helpful, you know, because it's like we take her out to go to the bathroom, the puppy follows. So, you know, it was like handy having that around. But I noticed that the furniture, the rugs, the smells, the grossness, the poop on the floor, Venus Pluto. Venus Pluto often comes up when something is damaged or tarnished, especially something that is supposed to be beautiful. A beautiful dress is ruined. Now, there was a movie that I saw, and I thought this was about the most Venus-Pluto movie ever. Hold on, let's see if I can find it. This movie that I saw was called Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris, and I watched it with my wife. Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris, I'm not going to give it away, but it is very much a story about beauty and blemishes. And it's an intensely Venus and Pluto kind of story, in my opinion. So if you want a good movie to watch over the weekend, you know, that embodies Venus and Pluto, it was a delightful movie. Like I would call them chick flicks. I know, sorry, that's like offensive, but that's what I would call them. And like, you know, but I like watching things with my wife because she suffers through, you know, I make her watch stuff. So I watch what she wants. We trade off. But I loved this movie. I thought it was really good. And I would highly recommend it. It was a magical and to me, very Venus Pluto kind of movie. There's other archetypes too, not just Venus Pluto, but Venus Pluto was like one of the big players in this movie. The idea behind Blemishes Are Beautiful goes like this. I have a client that comes to see me and they will have, for example, something in their life. They will be dealing with the idea that something in their life is ugly. It could be often it's going to be their own, their body or their health or their physical appearance. And they want to have a plastic surgery, which I don't have any judgments about if people do that or don't do that. You know, it's not my business and I respect people's rights to do what they want. So I don't ever have like a script about what to say or do when someone comes wanting to talk about it. But I've noticed time and time again that under Venus Pluto dynamics, it will be, I don't like my stomach. I don't like my legs. I don't like my body after having a baby, whatever it is. And there will be the idea of, I want to have some kind of treatment or surgery or something to transform the way that I look because I don't like living with what feels like a stain. I used to look this way. Now I don't. I look this way. I want to look that way again. All of that kind of stuff comes up with Venus Pluto. There's a kind of beauty in the beast dynamic where something that was kind of ugly gets transformed into something beautiful through love and care. There's changes in perception. I found this offensive or ugly, and now I suddenly find it beautiful and attractive. What I was repulsed by, I'm now attracted to. What I was attracted to, I'm now repulsed by. And I think very similar to the idea that secrets can be sacred is the idea that blemishes are often beautiful. It is often through acceptance of the things that refuse to change, that don't easily, the marks and stains that don't go away, and the acceptance of those things that deepens our understanding of what makes something beautiful. It's like when my wife met me, I had a couple of t-shirts that I loved and were just like ragged. You know, and my, I think it's kind of a, maybe it's like a guy thing a little bit, but maybe you guys are similar. I don't know. Majority of the audience that watches this are women. I think maybe sometimes women have similar things, jackets or I don't know, something, a purse or a shirt that you love. She was like, that looks ratty. You know, you need to, and I was like, but it has so much character, you know, like I have worn this to 15 ayahuasca ceremonies. I've slept on the floor. I fell asleep on a friend's carpet or, you know, like just how many, I love this t-shirt because even though it's kind of gross and beat up, it has so much character. That's kind of a Venus Pluto thing as well. Anytime when we are forced to look at something ugly, but try to find a place for it. Remember that the word cosmos and the word cosmetic share the same root, and they both carry with it the idea of finding an arrangement for everything. So Venus-Pluto transits always seem to arrive in the life of my clients at a time when they have to make room for something that they find ugly or embarrassing, or they may want to transform it and maybe they do, but there's also, there's some need to like reconcile or make room for, or you know, make an arrangement for something that stands out and is complicated or difficult and might be described as a blemish. It's a very Venus-Pluto dynamic. Blemish. The etymology means to damage or spoil, to disfigure. But also, did you know the Proto-Germanic roots of this word mean to shine, flash, or burn? To shine, flash, or burn. So what I want you to imagine is that Venus Pluto, although it can be like the stain on a shirt, you know, or something that you don't like or find ugly, it's also like... being struck by lightning is not like a Plutonian thing. It sounds more Uranian. But imagine getting struck by lightning and it leaving you permanently, you know, like with a huge white, like, you know, glistening mirror-like streak on your cheek. So there's something about blemish that has the idea of being struck by something spiritual. people have always, for thousands of years, throughout folk tales and fairy tales and mythology, spoken of the blemish, the scar, the disfiguration, also as carrying something like the mark or seal of a god. So there's something about blemishes that are not just damaged, despoiled, or disfigured, but also something that resembles a shine, a flash, or a burn. And I think that's really important because so much of what Venus, Pluto in Capricorn seems to be about is what we are forced to carry. A secret, a stain, a blemish, an embarrassment, and to make room or place for it, and to maybe even find its hidden aesthetic value, which is why secrets are also so important. To have a few for yourself means that something that originally and maybe socially might look like a blemish or a disfiguration in the secret rooms of your heart is like a shining medallion. It's a lightning flash from the gods. It is a streak of fire. Can't seem to be that unless we take some deliberate, secretive underworld-like space or create a container for it. So blemishes are beautiful. Secrets are sacred. By the way, the word confess, we talked about confession. To confess means to acknowledge or to speak of, to tell or to say, but also to acknowledge. One of the things that I will never forget, when I was in graduate school, I did therapy with a former nun. And one of the things that she said to me was, she said, you know, because I would come into those sessions and I would just confess everything. Like, and she would sometimes say, one time in particular, she said, it's nice that you're confessing and sharing all of these things, but I've noticed that, you know, you might be thinking of me too much like a nun because you know that I was a nun before. And it's nice of you to acknowledge the things that you've done that have been complicated or that you've had some guilt or remorse about. It's nice that you're self-conscious in this way. And there's a space for confession. In fact, she told me, you know, confession played a role in her life for many, many years. So she had a very sacred appreciation for confession. But she said, one of the things that was most valuable to me was in learning that the real confession, the deepest confession, happens in the secret of your own heart. To acknowledge things in the secret of your own heart, to confess them in a little confessional box where your own soul is the one bearing witness. That is what makes honest, sincere people. That's what makes an honest, sincere person. That's what gives you depth and soulfulness. That's what grows wisdom inside of you. It's not, and the person on the other side of that box inside of you doesn't need to give you penances to do. They just need to listen. And you just need to bear witness to your own acknowledgement within. And I remember when she told me that, it was really deeply life-changing. I also talked about carrying things. The word carry means to gain victory through effort or to bear up and support. To gain victory through effort or to bear up and support. Some of the most beautiful things that Venus, Pluto, will give us will be the opportunities to carry something within, deeply within, because the temptation to go and try to resolve ourselves or resolve something in the court of public opinion or in the court of a relationship or our social standing, our reputation, that's always there. And there's that world is, in my opinion, there's no shortage of us participating in that world and trying to develop a sense of identity that passes the grade in the social reality. There's a place for that, and it's an important one. It is a sacred one on its own. But something about Venus Pluto says, can you carry this inside? Can you make a blemish? Can you find places for the blemish? Can you hold and work with secrets? Can you confess internally? I think these are underdeveloped elements of the Venus-Pluto archetype. Anyway, finally, there's innocent but not ignorant. The word innocent could mean free from guilt, but one of the meanings etymologically is simply the word, the etymological root of innocent also means disinterested. Now compare this, or contrast this, I should say, with the word ignorant, which could mean literally to ignore. So on the one hand, you have a kind of disinterest with innocent, and on the other hand, you have ignoring. Now, why do I bring this up? I have seen many clients over the years who will go through a Venus-Pluto transit, and they might tap into their inner slut. I don't know. That just flew out of my mouth. So they might just have a one-night stand, or they might just do something kinkier than they've ever done before. You know, they might get in touch with a part of themselves that they feel, you know, well, I've lost my innocence, you know. You know. Okay. So unfortunately, Venus Pluto is also associated with the very real taking of innocence, as in things like sexual abuse or even rape. But there's a big, big difference. People in Hillman like to say this a lot too, that people in our culture love to cling to an appearance, like a feigned appearance of innocence. I'm good, I'm innocent, I'm good-hearted, I'm simple, I'm innocent. We project ourselves that way. And what that usually means for those of us who are far more complicated and who have deep, dark places and transgressions and secrets and things we carry and blemishes, that when we project the image of innocence, what it really is an image of ignorance. In other words, what we're really projecting is something that we are ignoring or denying. So what we project, what we think looks like innocence to someone who's observant, will really pick up as a kind of ignorance, a kind of active ignoring, willful ignoring or denying. So this begs the question, what does it mean to be innocent? Innocent here could mean, again, doing no evil, free from sin, guilt, or moral wrong. Well, none of us are really innocent in that sense. But there is another sense of the word that is often, it's lost on us. You know, we and that is this idea of disinterest. And this is not disinterest as in a willful, ignorant denying, right? That would be the ignorance. This disinterest is more like a form of non-attachment. So to remain innocent in some ways means to remain unattached. So let's give an example. You know, we've all seen this movie before. I'm just going to make it up. But we've all seen the movie where the science the nerd, the high school nerd. I'm just like a coming of age movie, and there's a nerd in high school. Okay. And it probably could have been, you know, me or you or anyone, you know, whatever. So no judgments here, but just someone who was like, you know, maybe the teacher's pet, they did really well in school, but they absolutely were not in touch with, you know, like having sex or even kissing someone or whatever. Well, in this movie, at the party, they get wasted. They become the complete life of the party. They get laid. You know, like, you know what I'm talking about? You've seen this movie before. There's some movie that's like this, right? The next day, when they are sober, you in that movie, you never see them suddenly having become this cool, cocky, confident, popular, super hypersexual person. No, they return to being something like what they were before. It's as though in that moment that their innocence has been retained despite having done lots of different things throughout the night that, you know, are often the most laughable scenes in the movie, but are the least innocent. Do you know what I mean? But it's somehow in the fact that there's not an attachment, the character's identity is not getting attached to all of those events and things, that we end up seeing them as largely the same kind of nerdy looking character the morning after. Now, that's just a stupid example. But oftentimes what I try to convey to my clients when they come in during a Venus-Pluto transit and they try to describe, okay, I had this experience and I feel like I've lost my innocence. I feel like they feel suddenly like a bad person on some level because of something that happened. Again, super Venus-Pluto thing that a lot of clients deal with. And I try to say, look, your innocence is, you know, your innocence really just has to do with being able to accept what happened and to have a kind of healthy non-egoic detachment, like a healthy disinterest. It's a bizarre thing that the word innocent has within it the connotation of like some sort of healthy detached disinterest. I'm just innocent here. Haven't you ever done something and the best possible response you had when something kind of shitty or crazy flew out of your mouth was like, well, that was nuts, but you don't stay attached to it. You stay sort of disinterested in the fact that you just did or said something that you shouldn't have or that was embarrassing or whatever, but you just let it go. There's a way in which when you let go of things, you retain your innocence. And so many times, the Venus-Pluto lesson is, well, that happened. And maybe the illusion of innocence that you were living with has been shattered. But real innocence is always there. It's a state of consciousness that's never inherently yours or can be taken away from you. It's when you just move into like this kind of beginner's mindset and you just allow for things to be what they are with a healthy level of unattachment. You let things keep going. That innocence is something we can always choose and return to, man, no matter what happens. And it is not at all the same as ignorance, which is a willful denying of something that happened or the projection of some kind of image of innocence that's rooted in the attachment, right? Because when you're attached to something that happened that was complicated or dark or blemished or whatever, you'll try to create an illusion. You know, well, look at how nice and sweet and perfect I am, you know, and there's a way that the less you try to do that, the more that you'll actually embody that. Something about this transit brings this dichotomy up between innocence and ignorance. I hope I've been able to get at it or talk around it in a way that is helpful. But I'm not sure. I just don't know. I have a little bit of cookie holiday hangover at the moment. It's some really good cookies. Oh my God. Anyway, I hope you guys are having a good week. Don't forget, we have to rally the support. A ridiculous number of backers we still need. 600. Actually, we've got 1,000 already. That's really, really good. I think, you know, we can get there. I've seen the last 4 or 5 days of the Kickstarters are oftentimes when we have the biggest turnout. I still think we can get there. I'm going to hold on, hope, and bang the drum for support for this channel and all of the good projects we have until the clock runs out. So thank you to everyone who's already donated. If you have not, find the link in the description and comments below. Pick up one of my classes. Come study with me. Come study with me and my staff of wonderful tutors and my teaching assistant, Delia. We have great programs. You can come study, get a big discount when you donate, or pick one of the talks, special talks that I made, or any of the other cool rewards. All right, that's what I've got for today. Hope you guys are having a good one. We'll see you again tomorrow. Bye.